Free is our favorite word. Like free refills. At Morgan & Morgan, our fee is free. You don't pay anything unless we win your case. Injured? Call Morgan & Morgan. ForThePeople.com.
It's free!
Hot round! Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing! Between living and dying!
Welcome into 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush, joined by Adam Luckett. This is awesome. We're using a new technology for the first time. Luckett, I feel like a kid on the first day of school getting to... Actually, it's probably a bad comparison because you're usually... Well, no, you're excited for the first day of school. Get to see your classmates for the first time. Get to try new things. And we're trying a new thing today, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, we've got a little ticker here, got a nice little background. Our two ugly mugs are kind of messing up the little show we got going on here. But yeah, big steps forward here for Kentucky Sports Radio and the 11 Personnel Podcast.
Yeah, it's the first anniversary of On3, so we're upgrading. If you haven't done so already, I know a lot of you are listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. But now you can watch us on YouTube. Subscribe to the KSR digital channel today. Just subscribe, comment, share, do all that fun stuff. We're going to be here all season long, providing a ton of content so you can watch us talk on the podcast or whatever it might be. We're going to have plenty for you. We've got plenty to talk about today because training camp starts this week for the Kentucky football team. We've got some big recruiting news. Grant Godfrey has pledged his allegiance to the Big Blue Nation. That was a huge stunner. Lots of good news to get to, but we're going to start by previewing fall camp, which I still call fall camp, Luckett, because that's what I've just grown accustomed to, even though it's in August. But fall camp is starting this week. They'll go with their helmets only, and then hopefully we'll get some shells for an open practice on Saturday and fan day. But there's a lot happening, Luckett, a lot to discuss. And particularly on the depth chart, we're not going to get a depth chart until week one arrives.
I've already got the depth chart. You don't need to wait till week one. It's out there.
You don't even
SportsRadio.com. We got offense, defense, fully broken down, two deep, all the way through, all 22 positions.
And it's going to have more details than Mark Stoops's. He's going to have a bunch of oars in there, you don't need all that. Luckett's got it covered for you. But I'm curious, Luckett, when you're going through this depth chart, what were some of the more difficult decisions you had to make, the more challenging ones? We know Will Levis is going to be quarterback one, but outside of that, what are some of those position battles you're going to be keeping an eye on during fall camp?
Running back is first one that really sticks out outside of Chris Rodriguez. We all know he's RB1, but who's RB2? You had Ramon Jefferson, FCS All-American transfer, added to the roster late June. So that's a very new development. We don't know much about him. You look at Jatan McClain, obviously coming back for his junior season, high expectations. You go on down the list. Kavassier Smoke, he's played a lot in three seasons. He'll be a redshirt senior this year. So after his redshirt year, he played a lot in 2019, played a lot in 2020, played a lot last fall. But last time we saw him, he was buried on the depth chart in the spring. Mm-hmm. Didn't hear much about him at all in spring ball, and he was like the fifth running back.
Yeah.
To see the field in the spring game. Michael Drennan, second year playing running back. He was a big, significant blue chip recruiting win there at the end of the 2020 class, one of the banner kind of commits they got there in that 2020 class. And then you add in Lavelle Wright, who's a guy, if you talk to people within the program, they have gushed over this kid.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy from that North Hardin pipeline. I mean, it seems like every player they get from North Hardin has turned into a player in Lexington. And there's another one on the other side of the ball we're going to get to in a little bit. But he's kind of the guy I think we're really going to be kind of focused in on here in fall camp. Rich Gangarello just went on with Tom Leach on Friday and really gushed about Lavelle. Mm-hmm. Said he thinks he's really close to kind of taking that next step and becoming a legitimate player for them. And overall, that running back position in general, like, they're going to have to use them, use those players a lot. Like, all these guys can play. You know, they can play a little bit. Maximizing that position with formation groups, personnel, structures, make sure they get everything out of them. And then, obviously, the elephant in the room, how much time does Rodriguez miss? And then they become even more important, especially that week two game against Florida. If your clear RB1, a potential All-American candidate, is not in the lineup.
Well, and the thing you bring up about Wright, it brings me back to kind of last year with Liam Cohen. His favorite guy to talk about was Jatah McClain, but we didn't get to see a ton of him. I almost forgot about Ramon Jefferson. I mean, there is a ton of guys out there. And when I was going through the UK record book, if you want to check it out, it's kind of fun. When I was a kid, I was a nerd. I'd read through all that stuff in the media guide. Mm-hmm. But like Kavasi Smoke, his average yards per carry, I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think it's sixth best in school history. So, like, there's a lot to work with there. I'm curious between Wright and McClain, which one will end up being the more talked about because they are pass catchers, and I think that's what Scangarello is going to like out of them. But a lot of 22 personnel this fall, Luckett. I think we're going to get a lot of the two tights and two running backs. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious which one's going to pop when Scangarello takes the mic at various points. And I'm curious also who's going to be leading the way. That left tackle position, Luckett, we've hammered it quite a bit. The one thing I will say, you've got a couple different options there. I feel like David Wallaball is going to be the, here's what happens if things go wrong. You can move this guy at right or swing left tackle. Yes, he's swing tackle, but he's not going to be the start. So how does Keontae Goodwin potentially fit into this rotation? Is DeAndre Buford ready to step up? I mean, they have the talent. I mean, Wallaball's the only one who's not a four or five star. So there's plenty of guys there. But ultimately, I think even though they did pursue Tyler Steen in the transfer portal, they did kind of get a vote of confidence by saying, you know what, like we're sticking with our guys. We like our team. And I think that does give me enough confidence to know that they have some dudes in there to make sure that it's not going to be a complete liability this fall.
Yeah, I think that's publicly, like, in the mainstream kind of talking of Kentucky football, that's the big one, the, you know, left tackle and tackle in general. Just how are they there? I think it's important to realize Kentucky's not going to use many five-man protection schemes this season. With the use of that tight end position, with the use of the running back, it's going to be
you can shift stuff.
Well, it's going to be typical NFL offense. You're going to have a lot of six, seven-man protections. This isn't Joe Burrow, LSU, where they're just getting in four or five wide. Their five-man protection and letting the quarterback pick them apart. It's not really going to be like that. It's going to be a lot of, you know, moving the pocket, setting up deep shot plays, having specific shot plays called so you have the protection set up for all that so you can absorb any type of stunt you might get from a defense. So I think that's – they're going to protect the tackles in general is kind of what I'm getting at there. I don't think there's going to be many situations where these guys are in an island, but there are going to be times when it's third down, you got to throw the ball. And you need them to hold up. So that's what you're going to need to see from DeAndre Buford, Jeremy Flax, Keontae Goodwin. I think it's a guy we need to keep an eye on here, fall camp.
Yep.
If game one turns into a potential fourth quarter runaway, that was obviously the huge recruit last year. You have to think they're going to try to get him in there to see what they have with him early. And if he can become kind of a rotational piece there with Wallaball, that gives you – insurance, right?
Yeah.
You really need one of these. You need one of Buford or Flax to really hit and to be that guy. All right, we got a guy we can build with who can potentially become kind of an all SEC type player for us. But in the meantime, we don't have to worry about him. He's a quality starter. And then you have three other guys at the other position where you can just figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you really need one of them to lock it down. This camp and this season, really. DeAndre Buford, I think Nick kind of fits their blueprint there. Redshirt sophomores that's been a popular year three for a guy to step into a starting role and really kind of own it. We saw it with Kenneth Lorsey, Eli Cox. There's two of them on the offensive line right now. We've seen it with others. That's when Luke Fortner really got in the lineup and started to play. So that's really kind of the year you start to see it. That's kind of their development plan at that position. And if if Buford can solve that, that really it not only answers a position now, it answers it for the next 3 years where you have that kind of lockdown. And then you really only then if you hit on Keyonte Goodwin or even Wolabaugh at all, then you could potentially have a situation next year where you're really deep at tackle, a position that is hard to be deep at.
Yeah.
So he's one of the more important players, I think, for Kentucky going into this year. If he can really kind of be a solid player, it really puts them in a great shape, not just for this year, but really long-term at that position.
Well, and the schedule allows Goodwin to be able to chunk up a lot of that valuable experience that he needs. You know, aside from Florida in week two, your entire month of September, I think it's just FCS and Maction, you know, like just go out there and be able to get some quality. Because I have a feeling, looking at sneaky suspicion, he's going to get some of those. All right, it's series three. It's still a close game. Let's see how you do against the first team pass rusher.
Yeah, he's going to get a predetermined series, right? I think that's a safe assumption. Yeah. Our first month of the season, especially just to see where he's at. He was in here for the spring, so been established. We all know he's got the physical skill set.
He's got the work ethic. It's just the reps. Just show us the reps. And then that's really what the whole left tackle in general. It's we haven't seen the reps. It's all been in practice. It's all been away from the field. It's got all the recruiting. Every other checkbox is crossed off. Now you got to go do it on the football field. And, you know, like you talked about the redshirt sophomore. It's kind of year three for this offensive line. It's a big year for him. It's not the case with the wide receivers. And as much as we know that Tavion Robinson is going to step in and get a lot of targets in that slot receiver position.
Right.
Who's next? You know,
yep.
There's a lot of dudes. You can run through the list, but who is next? Who's going to be that second wide receiver to get a lion's share of the touches? Luckett, you got to make a bold prediction today. All right. Receptions. Let's go purely receptions. Who has the second most receptions on this team besides Tavion Robinson in 2022? Bold prediction.
Well, it's not a receiver; it's a tight end.
Oh,
but we can get we'll get into that in a minute. But like wide receiver, like if you want to talk receiver, obviously Tavion is going to be wide receiver one in the offense. I don't think people need to overthink that. The Shanahan McVay offense is very slot receiver driven. Part of the reason Mark Stoops hung his hat on this scheme was historically Kentucky's been able to find good slot receivers. And they can, and this offense unlocks them and allows them to really kind of carry a passing game. So I think Tavion Robinson's going to step in, and you're not going to see the Wandale Robinson numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if he pushes 70 receptions this year, Nick.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a huge part of the offense. Now, wide receiver next to him, you know, Dane Key, I think, has kind of got that next position locked up, and he's kind of the true X receiver we've talked about,
right?
That can line up into the boundary and beat one-on-one press coverage and make tough catches. I think that's what he's going to provide the offense. Now it's his first year playing, so the bar should be low. You typically, Nick, you don't see true freshmen really come out in the SEC, and you don't see the Rondale Moore year like he had at Purdue as a true freshman.
Right.
You typically, it takes them a little bit. So, like, the bar, I think we need to be very careful with Dane Key here. I think expectations are high for him. But I think best-case scenario might just be, you know, 35 receptions, 500 yards, something like that,
which is solid. I mean, that's a great year for most Kentucky receivers.
So, I think he's the second guy there. But really, you need a third. You got to have a third guy. I think tight end, kind of their depth there kind of eliminates some of that and how they're going to use running back at tight end. But the biggest position battle in this camp, obviously we're all going to be watching Key and Barry and Brown. And the latter specifically is going to have some schemed up touches, I think, weekly. They just got to find ways to get the ball in his hands because he has a certain level of juice that they just haven't had around here in a long time.
Three touches minimum, I think, a week for Barry and Brown.
Right. But the big one is kind of DeMarcus Harris versus Chris Lewis. You've got a redshirt freshman and a redshirt junior. You need one of those guys to be in a dependent player for you that you can depend on weekly. And you kind of need it to be an upgrade over what you had last year, wide receiver three. Last year you kind of had Isaiah Epps in a revolving door. DeMarcus Harris got in there a little bit. You need Chris Lewis or DeMarcus Harris to be a better wide receiver three this year. And that's really I think that's a real key in the offense, because if they get that, it kind of it'll balance out.
Yeah,
the true freshman growing pains I think Dan Key could possibly have, and it won't put too much pressure on the tight end and position and Tavion Robinson there in the slot. So having one of these guys really step up, I think it's going to be key. And we've heard good things said about both DeMarcus Harris and Chris Lewis. Like if you look at any workout video with Will Levis, Chris Lewis was always there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a good sign. And it's a guy we all liked a lot coming out of high school. He was kind of the big X receiver that they got recruiting wise. And then now Yankees kind of taken over. But if you can find a way to get consistent play out of either one of them, it would be a huge win. And I think it would have a big impact on the offense.
Yeah, and Harris is a guy that Levis talked about developing the trust with him this offseason. That trust, that's a big word, because there for a while last year, he got the yips at the beginning of the year. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. He dropped a pass, and it just kind of snowballed. So the consistency is the big key there. I know with Lewis, it was a lot about developing physically. I mean,
he's just so skinny.
Yeah, yeah. But he has the athletic tools. I mean, he was the Birmingham Athlete of the Year. He was All-State in football and basketball. Like, this kid, he's got the competitive juice. He's a bulletin board material guy. Like, long-term, we've discussed this. He has what it takes. How quickly, though, is he going to make that jump?
Right.
We're going to be paying attention.
For him, too, Nick, it's kind of a big year for Chris Lewis to stake down a spot with the way they're recruiting receivers. Mm-hmm. Like, Shamar Porter's coming in, and he's an ex-receiver, and he's a dude.
Yeah.
So, and he might be a little more physically mature at this point in his career. So he's going to be coming in and he could play. And if Dane Key's
the real deal,
what's been leaked out. Yeah. So this is a big, big year, I think, for Chris Lewis to kind of stake down a spot. So that's an underrated kind of development, I think, to notice, because so Kentucky's recruiting receivers at kind of a different level than they've ever had. And so it's going to put pressure a little bit on that room. So big year. For number 89 there, redshirt freshman out of Birmingham.
I want to go to the defense to talk about position battles, but I'm curious though, which tight end is it going to be Upshaw?
I think in the last week, I've just talked myself into Isaiah Cummings just having a monster season. I like that take. We've talked about this guy, Nick, since he was senior at Mel, and we've all said, you know, he could play receiver, but if they move him to tight end, he could be a real weapon. Like an NFL, he can be a draft pick. And we saw some signs of it last year, I think. Caught 3 touchdowns, had 14, 15 receptions, but he missed some time there at the end, had dealt with injuries. But I just think he's going to be a real important part of this offense because of that positional versatility, because of how he can flex out. He can do some of the HVAC stuff that they want to do. He can block, which is going to help them scheme up some play action pass stuff. I just think there's a lot there with him, and he can in a pinch, he can line up into the boundary as an X receiver and win some stuff for you. So I think him a year in the weight room, he's got to add some weight on junior season. I think he's just going to have confidence. A big year. Keaton Upshaw, I think everybody, that's a more popular one, I would say, but I think there's real injury concerns there with him. He played in the spring, but we saw him. He just didn't look the same coming back from that pectoral injury. So he's kind of a little bit of a wild card, I think, there. But I think Cummings is going to have a real big role in the offense.
Well, and in Cummings' case, you know, with Upshaw, we saw a few flashes. But I think we've seen more consistent. Like I feel like I can rely on Isaiah Cummings a little bit more. He had that big block down at South Carolina to spring free a Kavassier smoke touchdown. You know, he's played physical, even though in his body it didn't look ready for that moment. And now you feel like this is the year for the Louisville kid, and that would not only be huge for Kentucky's recruiting cases in Louisville, like, hey, male kids, look what your boy's doing. And he's also going to look like a badass this year, wearing number 8, changing up his number. Going to look real good lining up at the
same digit action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and J.J. Weaver kind of teamed together. It's been like 3-4 years now, Nick, where they've kind of had their way in city of Louisville recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
But they need like these guys to produce. And I think Cummings and Weaver can both become draft picks. And if they're two guys, if Kentucky has a big season like people think they can have, and these guys play big roles in that on both sides of the ball, that's a huge selling point,
yeah,
I think, in that city. And especially with Louisville – the California Cardinals down there, not recruiting the city a whole lot. It can widen the gap a little bit there for Kentucky in recruiting. Now you look out this next class, the two classes might not be great, but you never know when that could change, or you could have a big type year talent wise in that city. So I think that's an important development to get some of these Louisville kids, get them playing at a high level, and potentially get them drafted, can continue kind of your in-state recruiting ownership they've kind of had the last couple of years, and maybe even make it an even wider margin.
To flip it to the other side of the football, I think there's a couple obvious position battles, and the most obvious is at cornerback, Luckett. And it's safe. I think we can safely say that Carrington Valentine and Kedron Smith are going to be cornerbacks 1 and 2. But outside of that, you're really throwing a lot up against the wall. And when I mean a lot, I mean a lot. Kentucky's added a lot of players this offseason and a lot of guys from unusual backgrounds. Jordan Robinson got lost in the shuffle in the COVID year, went to a D2 school, and then Kentucky found him at Livingston College and was like, all right, let's see what you got. London Kraft played for 3 different coaches at Mississippi State in 5 years and was a walk-on for the majority of it, but started in 8 games in 2020. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got a lot of experience there. And in addition to that, you just the talent that you've brought in through the recruiting ranks, you know, what's Drew Phillips going to look like once he gets more logs? So and not only with Drew, but there's like 7 other guys that are in their first or second year where you just don't know what they're going to bring to the table. And you have to find a third guy somewhere. And I have no idea who it's going to be. Nobody would shock me in this group.
Let's start with what's established here. Carrington Valentine's returning after starting every game last year, played nearly 800 snaps. He's got a spot locked down. And then over at the other cornerback spot, I think you're going to see kind of a position battle between Kedron Smith and Andrew Phillips. I think we all expect Smith, the Ole Miss transfer, to win that battle. But Phillips is huge here, Nick, because they need mm-hmm. a rotational corner to play.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the rest of the room, you talked about kind of odd or different kind of recruitments or backgrounds. Like Elijah Reed also fits that.
Yeah.
You know, switch position, super senior in high school. Mm-hmm. And now he ends up at Kentucky. And I think he made a big splash there in the spring, but he's very much a development prospect. Him and Andre Stewart, both are 2 signees. They're true cornerbacks. And then we don't know about Alex Afari.
Yeah.
Or Kobe Albert. I think Kobe Albert's a true safety.
Yeah.
Afari was a big recruiting win out of Cincinnati.
Feels like a nickel slot. Kind of, yeah. Like in the box
I could see that, but I could also see him being, you know, using that length and just putting him at bouncer corner.
Yeah.
That too. So how they use him is going to be, I think, interesting to follow here. But really with a big one, you need Phillips to emerge here as a redshirt sophomore and be a contributor.
Right.
Contributor for them. And then I think the nickel is obviously a huge one. Huge one here. That position battle. Vito Tisdale, this would be his spot.
Yeah. He was going to be a bone crusher this year. Delivered.
Right.
Yeah.
And get a bunch of reps. And because like Vito missed a lot of practice time.
Yeah.
He was a true freshman. Didn't come in for the spring. Shows up late. Then he missed all of spring last year. Most of fall camp with the off-field arrests and the charges end up being dropped. Comes back in the middle of season. Then he comes to spring. You were hoping full spring, full fall camp, and really the signs were there where he could have maybe took a big jump forward as mm-hmm. a player. But he's out now, towards ACL in the spring. And so that put them in a little bit of a bind. They go out and beat TCU in Washington for Texas State transfer Zion Childress. She started 2 years for Texas State at kind of a safety and nickel role. And then he's in a big position battle, I think, with Joel Williams, mm-hmm. junior out of Baton Rouge. With a 4-star recruiting win 2020.
You loved his tape.
I loved his tape coming out of high
so
school.
So much.
it's just, for whatever reason, it hadn't stick. But this is kind of the last dance, I think, for Joe Williams.
Well, and like, he was a guy who missed a lot of practice time, too. He's got to make up for it. And he missed time in the spring. He's got to get healthy, and he's got to take his medicine, as Stoops likes to put it.
It's now, I think, for Joe, I think it's kind of now or no. Like, you got to – now is the time. So this is going to be, I think, one of the more – it should be one of the more intense battles, I think, in this camp. Like, it should be a legit battle, like, who's getting that nickel spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also important because you got to realize early if you can hold up there or not. If you can't, then you're going to have to make some personnel moves. Potentially Jalen Geiger moving him back down to nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And then a key in this whole thing, I think, back in the back end is Jordan Lovett, another North Harden guy, like we talked about. He really shined there, Nick, in the spring.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, yeah. I think, a lot of people. And you kind of dig into his recruiting profile, ton of ball skills. He led the nation in interceptions his junior season. He was kind of late to the game of football, but he's got some real athletic traits here. He's already over 200 pounds, 6'1", 6'2". He's got really good speed, it seems like, can really close down, physical, willing tackler. I think there's a lot there with Lovett. I think he could be a potential star on their defense. And if that light comes on, you know, and he kind of takes the next step, it could be a situation where they just can't keep him off the field. Like, he's got to play somewhere. And that could cause some shuffling there in the back end.
Well, and as Mark Stoops put it, you know, with some of those guys that in the back of the defense, a lot of it can't be taught. A lot of it's instincts. And
he's got the instincts, right?
He's got the instincts. And he's also, if he's making a mistake, it's an overly aggressive mistake. That's what you love to see. Just somebody who's willing to do whatever it takes to make the big hit, to make the big play. It's kind of like Vito Tisdale, which I know we're not going to see him wrecking any dudes. I mean, he hurt himself in the Citrus Bowl. He tackled a guy so
envisioning
hard.
Love it. And Tisdale on defense
again. Oh, man. Just flying so much there. Fun.
I mean, that's we're not going to see it this year. We're going to have to wait till 2023. Yeah. But when that happens and both those guys should be able to play 2 years together,
mm-hmm.
you're just going to see some closing speed and some hits that you just haven't seen from a Kentucky defense. And it's going to make those zone windows a lot smaller.
And we're not going to get to see Vito actually on the field this year, but when we've been at practice like it, that dude is still being Vito Tisdale, like hopping yeah. around on one leg on the sideline, trying to like get people hyped. And when he's at Kroger Field this fall, he's going to walk over to the Louisville student section and throw his L's down. Like, he's still going to be chirping. It's just going to be with a brace around his knee on the side. Mm-hmm. You can take the Vito off the field, but you can't take the field out of the Vito.
A little, some chirping on crutches.
It's going to be great.
But yeah, we'll
the 2015 Governor's Cup when you had like Drew Barker and them.
But obviously you don't want anyone to be injured, but at least the Vito injury happened as early as it did. So you had time to kind of go to the portal, find a quality player.
Mm-hmm.
And he should be back for spring ball. Even if it's not 100%, he should be able to do most team activities.
Well, it's kind of similar to getting Jaquez Jones from the portal last year, where when Jackson got right. when D-Jack got hurt.
And now you look at this year, the depth is
freaking loaded there. Right. Yeah, because we don't need to talk about position battles at linebacker because it's stout. It's deep. It's
established. Yep.
Defensive line, we don't know who's going to be like it. That's going to be a two-man rotation. That's a back committee approach. So really, a lot of the position battles are on the back end. But like it, I want to change things up slightly. We can go big picture here, or we can go individual player. But who does need to improve the most in your eyes? Going into this fall camp, you've got I'm bad on the days, the number of practices and all that stuff, but who needs to take the biggest leap from day one until kickoff against Miami of Ohio?
Yeah, you mentioned the cornerback position and just the secondary in general, how they're throwing stuff at the wall with some of the additions, it feels like, from the transfer portal. They're just like, we got to have bodies at least to mm-hmm. give us options. And that works. But the only way, like really the only way I think a cornerback becomes like a solid position for Kentucky this year, it's Carrington Valentine takes a big jump forward. So junior, played a little bit as a true freshman, started a ton last year, probably started a year early in his development, probably needed another year kind of to add strength in the weight room. He's a junior now. He's had an extra offseason in the program. Like, you need to see him take a jump forward. He's got to be one of Kentucky's better defensive players this year for them to really kind of improve there and not be a total weakness there on the back end. Because if he's good, then that other corner position becomes maybe lesser of a worry. You feel like it has a high floor, at least with Gedron Smith. And then safety, it becomes, I guess, you know, you're losing some star power with Corker. That becomes maybe lesser if you get some big-time play from Carrington Valentine. But he's the key. I mean, he's really got to take a step forward for Kentucky this year because they need him there, because they had a lot of guys, but they're still not very deep, Nick. You know, they I mean, they got three guys, I think, at cornerback where they're probably thinking that could play this year. So you need Carrington Valentine to really have a big season and be someone you can depend on weekly to make some plays for you.
And I think the big thing with him, Luckett, is just don't be a liability. You know, like I remember my friend who's a Louisville fan. I know we all make bad choices, but he used to play a game. It was take a drink every time Fred Tiller gets burned. Sorry, Fred Tiller, don't mean to be throwing strays your way, but that's just kind of the nature. Like, there's been plenty of guys throughout the year that we've watched Kentucky football. It's an older generation mostly that used to watch those cats where the secondary got burnt time and time and time again. And that can't be the case because it happened all too often in that Tennessee game last year. You just have to be solid. Not even a boss man fat, let's go pick off four or five passes in seven games or whatever it may be, but you can't be getting picked on. And last year, they really picked on Valentine a lot, and that it showed. You know, well, it showed.
Let's call what Kentucky is. Like, there's not a lot of cover one bump and run going on.
No, not at all.
He's going to play, you know, he's going to be in a zone heavy scheme, but that's going to require him to come up and make tackles.
Mm-hmm.
When the time comes where they need him to come be physical and make a tackle, he needs to make a tackle. He missed too many of those last year. When he finds himself at the top of a route, he's got to make some plays on the ball. Didn't make very many plays on the ball last year. So that's really what they need from him. Some physicality and being able to play through some things. But they also need him durability. Like, he's going to have to play a lot of snaps again. Like, playing near 800 snaps last year was not fair to him.
It's remarkable. Yeah.
You know,
especially in a position that runs so much.
Well, and especially at a position where you got to have unfiltered, just
confidence.
I'm the man confidence. And if your confidence is shaky, that's not great at that position because you're put on an island a lot. Even in a zone heavy defense like Kentucky's, you're going to find yourself in some one-on-one situations where you've either got to make a play in coverage or make a tackle.
Yeah.
And so for him, I think that's really – I think from it's a physicalness, I would say.
Yeah, which
making
which
tackles,
comes,
making plays through bigger body receivers, especially if they keep him at that boundary corner, Nick. You're going to be facing 6'3", 6'4", big physical X receivers weekly. And not only that, you're going to be facing guys who with speed who can get free releases. So you've got to really be on your game at that spot. And so they just really need him to really take a step forward. If he takes a step forward – you can feel good about corner. If he doesn't, it's going to be a big, big weak spot of the defense again, and that's not something they really need because they're playing some good quarterbacks this year, Nick. They played some good ones last year, and they got
that was their three losses. Yeah,
and they were the three losses exactly.
Yeah,
and so you can't lose to every good quarterback you play again. You're gonna have to beat some of them, and that means you need corners to cover receivers and make plays on the ball.
And our friend John Hale, formerly Courier Journal, now with the Herald Leader, you know, his hot take was, yeah, that Carrington Valentine will just be like a Derek Beatty, just a solid guy. And if that happens, I don't see why not. Brad White's given me plenty of reason to believe that it's going to be the case. Valentine has him, like, physically, if you've seen him from year to year, he looks different. And his redshirt year was a COVID year. That's not really redshirt year. It was a lot of trial by fire this year. So he's poised, he's teed up for this. Now he just has to make the most of his opportunity. And I think you can say the same thing about Kentucky's defensive line, where similar to the offensive line, that's I don't want to say a slow cooker, but it takes some time to develop. And especially at nose, Kentucky has, they've got a nice rotation going where you're in that you're backing up for 2 or 3 years. And you fill in for a former four-star guy. You're backing up for 2 or 3 years. Guy gets drafted. You step on up. That's going to be the case for Justin Rogers and Josiah Hayes at nose, particularly Rogers, because before there was Keontae Goodwin, it was Justin Rogers. He was the highest-ranked commitment signee in the internet era of Kentucky football. And he's going to be asked a lot of this year, now entering his third year. And it doesn't stand out when you watch on the tape, but he actually has some pretty impressive stats through his first 2 years where he's had done some solid contributing, particularly in the run game.
Yeah, that's where his strength is.
But this defensive line in general, we talked a lot about that 2020 recruiting class. Whenever I remember Rivals had a story, the best defensive line classes in the country was Alabama, Clemson, Kentucky. They had a lot of 4 and 5 stars at every position across the board. And now that Josh Pascal's gone, you're going to have every person on that starting defensive line is going to be a 2020 recruiting class signee. And as good as J.J. Weaver is and as good as Jordan Wright are at creating havoc, this team was middle, back of the pack in sacks last year in creating those kind of plays because they didn't get enough. Like, you have to get some natural push from that defensive line. Octavius Oxendine, you got to step up. Trayvon Ripka, you had a couple big plays in that Citrus Bowl, but that has to be consistent. And I think this group, like it, they have the physical tools, but this is a position that it's a tough daily grind. And they have to mature from 20 to 21-year-olds. And I don't know about you, Lucky, but I had this moment. I remember being, 1:32 a.m. I had way too much to drink at Tin Roof, and there was like a light went off where you just kind of grow up, or it's the next morning after that. You have that dumb moment where you realize, like, okay, there's a big difference between being 20 and 21, and this needs to be the case for these juniors. You have to grow up from being the kid who's there for the fun and to being the adult that treats this like work every single day.
Oh, yeah. Those 2020 guys, the draft window starts now. It's year 3.
Mm-hmm.
They're officially in – they're a draftable prospect now, officially. So you really got to turn it on. For me at that position – Nick, I think this team's going to be pretty solid against the run. Like, they've got size on the defensive line. They're going to be able to hold up well. The linebacker position is really good. Weaver and Wright, both good edge setters in the run game. I think they're against the run. As long as they have a safety that can come down and fill, that's where I think Jalen Geiger's really got to – that's where he really needs to take over for Corker. Because we know – I don't think – we kind of well know that Asian, that's not a real strength for him, Tyrell Asian there, the other safety spot. He needs to be more of your deep safety.
Mm-hmm.
You need Geiger to be more kind of that alley filler.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think the run defense is going to be fine. I'm not really super worried about that. Rodgers, I know, can play, can fit the run. I think Ox can do. I think he really – that was a big worry last year, and I think he showed against Florida.
You
turn on the Florida tape, you can see it. You turn on the LSU tape, you can see it. Him, big body in some SEC offensive tackles. And taking on double teams. But to me, like, it's all comes down to the pass rush. Like, the way Kentucky plays defense, you just got to be able to rush the passer. Like, for them to be a top 15, top 20 unit, they have to be able to get consistent pressure. With that, where does the pass rush come from? I think we think Weaver and Wright could be a pretty good duo, but I don't think they're Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And so you got to have some help here. And so who can create an organic pass rush in that normal 4 down front when you slide Weaver as an outside rusher. So the other 3 guys, I think Josiah Hayes has some potential as an interior rusher. And Ohio State transfer Darian Henry Young is obviously the big one.
Yeah.
If he can become kind of a situational rusher for you, he's got a lot of length. That was, he was a big time recruit out of Cincinnati. If he can become that and give you kind of a situational pass rusher there, it's maybe slide down maybe as a 3-tech. That's where it's going to come from. They really need the pass rush to really take a step forward. Now, and it took a step forward last year, Nick. Like, if you remember 2020, the pass rush was just bad. Kentucky was a good pass rush away from having a legitimate, I think, top 20, top 15 defense that year because they had an NFL corner and they had Jamin Davis who was cleaning up everything at the second level.
Yeah.
The pass rush just didn't get home enough, and that was the biggest issue on that defense, and they played 3 top 10 offenses in that 2020 season. So that made the numbers look a little worse than what they really should have been stretched out over a full frame, especially when you consider that Florida and Alabama's offense they saw, which have been 2 of the better offenses we've seen in the last 6-7 years in all of college football. And so that's really the key, I think, for this defense. And if the games go like we think they're going to go, Nick,
mm-hmm.
if Kentucky's going out there and scoring 35 points a night on offense and they're not doing it in a tempo game, where there's a lot of possessions or lesser possessions, it takes a lot of pressure off the defense, but it also puts a lot of pressure on the opposing offense where these teams might have to get pass heavy. And they're probably not going to be afraid to get pass heavy based on what they saw on tape from Kentucky's defense last year.
Yeah. They want to get Kentucky out of their base and into a nickel.
Yeah.
Like that.
So they have to be able, this front has to be able to create some pressures, move the inside of the pocket. make a quarterback uncomfortable. So then that's when their edge rushers can really make an impact on the game. If they got an inside push, that's really forcing the issue. So they got to have a couple guys step up. I think when we get back, Hayes and Henry Young, I think, are the two big candidates there.
And to your point, Luckett, the part that I guess slightly worries me is I think that their best rushers aren't your every down guys. It's like a specialty package where you put in Henry Young and you put in Hayes. That's why Octavius Oxendine is so important because he was bringing it on a first and second down level. Whereas, you know, there's probably going to be some teams that are going to have to throw on UK on first down instead of just the obvious third and eights. You know, you can't only rush the passer when it's third and eight. You can't only do that when it's obvious that you have to be able to generate it elsewhere. So I guess that's my biggest worry is getting it on a down to down basis. Like, is Trayvon Ripka going to be able to provide that if they're just straight drop back like Josh Pascal did? You don't have to be Josh Pascal in year one, but you at least need to move the pocket some to be able to force them to make some errant throws. Because even, you know, successful pass rush isn't always a sack. It's just making that quarterback uncomfortable to where they're not sitting back there all day and hitting their timing routes whenever they want.
Nick, this is a position that's physically taxing.
Mm-hmm.
You usually lose guys.
Yeah. The last 2 years.
It was unfortunate that they lost McCall, Pascal, and Ox. Their three starters missed games last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that had a lot to do with kind of the defensive slide at the end of the season. But who do you think, who's the one guy that they can't afford to lose there on that front? Do you think it's
Ox? Especially when we saw what Calvin Tavor did and how effective
he's leader of that group too.
Yeah, yeah. He's the outspoken leader. His name's Ox, for crying out loud, too. He's an absolute
North Harden.
North Harden.
North Harden episode of 11 Personnel
today. Shout out to Coach Thompson for really filling up Kentucky's coffers. But he's a guy you cannot afford to lose. And it's that every down aspect. I mean, Calvin Tavor led the SEC in sacks in the regular season back in 2019. And it's because he was able to do it on a down-to-down basis. And not only just from the pass rush perspective, knocking the balls down. And that dude, he carries weight better than any person. We saw him at camp this summer, and they're like, yeah, he's 275. I'm like, he looks 235. Yeah. That dude is ox.
Both him and Trayvon Ripka lost a good amount of weight. You have to think that's by design. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking that's to get the pass rush. And you just saw Calvin Taylor's recruiting bio. It's not much of a recruiting bio. That is the recruit and develop blueprint right there for Kentucky. So whenever we get on here and maybe don't see it with a little three-star, that's what they're going to throw in our face every time. Look at that. No picture. 6'9", 295 coming out. Basketball player.
Yeah, I think his other offer was like Augusta Georgia Christian. Southern or something. Yeah, I mean.
Temple, I think. I think they beat out Temple Tough there for Calvin Taylor.
Okay, look, we have touched on some impact freshmen. We don't need to run through the gamut again on Barry and Brown, Dane Key, Keontae Goodwin. We know their significance. Are there any other impact freshmen that, like, okay, I could see this guy playing in bits and spurts?
If there's an injury to Rodgers or Hayes, I think Deion Walker is going to play at nose. And I think he could be a situation where you get into October, maybe, and, you know, you're getting through the rigors of an SEC schedule. You need him to come in and play some snaps, even if he keeps a redshirt year. So it could be similar to Khalil Saunders last year. Yeah. Where he plays some of the big moments for you. So he's a guy I would keep an eye on. Kobe Albert and Alex Afari are obviously two big ones on defense. I think they could help you somewhere if you needed to. I wouldn't be surprised if Kobe Albert is Tyrell Agin's backup when we open the season. And I wouldn't be surprised if he plays most of the year because I think he could be the starter there next year in 2023. It's kind of your deep safety, deep post safety, your coverage safety there in the back end.
And I'm looking at Keaton Wade too because he's very polished, not only from – he knows his stuff, for a lack of better term, and especially when it comes to the pass rush – or excuse me, the pass coverage fits and things like that. Jordan Wright has – durability has been an issue with him throughout his career. So I think Wade can make an impact on defense. And then more so offensively, Jordan Anthony's going to get here late, but he's another guy that's just so fast. How do you keep a world-class athlete like Jordan Anthony off the field? Like, just run a go route, just go run straight. You know, like there's going to be opportunities, I think, there for him as well.
Yeah, and I think most overall, they got a really good class. They're going to be able to redshirt a lot of these guys, keep them that blueprint that they want, Nick. So that I think that's important as you kind of like space out your roster here because this is the second class in a row where these guys don't have the COVID year. 2021 class and 2022 class do not have the COVID year. And so it's going to be a typical timeline here for these players. So you have to keep that in mind when making redshirt decisions and all of that. You don't necessarily have to use that because you can use it later in their career. So I think, you know, that you show this Kentucky's roster strength where they're at, that they're able to put some of these talented players on the back burner for a little bit and let them physically develop. The one thing I do worry about at that edge spot is that's just really hard for a true freshman to come in and do anything there. Like, you've got to be a total freak show usually to really make an impact at that spot. And obviously Kentucky doesn't have a backup outside of Wright and Weaver other than a true freshman. I think Wade's probably the most likely one to play this year. But my expectations are not – I wouldn't say the bar is very high. And if an injury happened there, I think you would see, Nick, they would just get more sub package. You would see a lot more nickel. Yeah.
That's a good point too, Luckett. All right, Luckett, let's put a bow on our fall camp preview. Who's going to be the real MVP? There's always one guy that about – August 26th, 22nd.
Isaiah Cummings was a winner last year.
We keep talking about this. We keep talking about this guy. So who'd you say was the guy last year?
Cummings last year.
Yep.
David Bouvier in 2018 sticks out. Mm-hmm. 2019, TJ Carter. 2020 was weird because it was
COVID.
Camp stuff was different. But yeah, and then I would say, wouldn't you say Cummings? It was either him or maybe Eli Cox.
Yeah, definitely, especially with the position change. I think ultimately, though, it's going to be in that running back room. And I'm confident that Jatahn McClain, Liam Cohen during his time here, he didn't mince many punches with us, but you could tell that he was visibly frustrated. He could not use Jatahn McClain more last year, particularly in the outside zone stuff, because I think Chris Rodriguez's biggest fault as a player is his inability to quickly read where the holes are, where the cutbacks are on that outside zone. Rich Scangarello strikes me as somebody who's going to be a lot more stubborn when it comes to running this stuff. He's going to be a lot more reliant. Cohen was much quicker to ditch it, but I think they're going to lean on McClain a lot to run outside zone, and not only to run outside zone, but to catch passes. It's something they try with Smoke, but Smoke just doesn't have the skill set really for it. McClain's got it. McClain does a little bit of everything, and I think he's going to be one of Rich Scangarello's favorite pieces. But the only reason why I'm worried about losing this Luckett, I think they're going to try to pump the brakes on him. They don't want people to know about it. Yeah. I think they're going to try to keep their lips sealed so people don't have number 13 circled on their scouting reports this fall.
Number 17, but yeah.
That's Anthony.
Who is Tavion Robinson's backup at slot? It might be this guy on the screen right here, Jatahn McClain. I think they're going to split him out and use him a lot in the passing game. I think that's going to be a big part of the offense. For me, I'm also staying in the running back room. I'm just going with someone else here. I just think there's some buzz here with Lavelle Wright and sticking with our North Harden theme here on 11 personnel. I just think he's probably going to be the standout. I think this fall camp, I think the new coaching staff really likes him. I think he's a scheme fit for what they're trying to do in the running game. He's got some size and some power and to go with some speed. And as we saw Chris Rodriguez and Kavassier Smoke both break out as redshirt freshmen in 2019, Nick, after flashing in a Louisville game with a big run, I think we see the kind of the same thing with Lavelle Wright. I think he becomes kind of maybe – their second most effective rusher, potentially behind Rodriguez. And I think he could maybe take a spot where he enters next year as a starter running back. So I think could be a big year here for the in-state prospect. I think Rich Gainerella said he dealt with some hamstring stuff in the spring. So there was obviously something that limited him. But even in post-practice stuff, we heard a lot about Wright, when you talk to people. He's a guy that a lot of people seem to be pretty high on. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a breakthrough from him this season, and he becomes not necessarily like, you know, a star player, but he could have a year maybe like Cummings last year where it's limited carries, but he's getting in there every week and he's making some splash plays where he enters year three and maybe that's like the liftoff for him. But I think he's going to become a guy who's going to be maybe a consistent player on the offense. Who's going to have a really big camp.
Well, and I've told this story before, but we'll stay with the North Harden theme of this podcast. When they played my DeSales Colts his junior year. Yeah. It'd be his junior year. I was asking my friend who's assistant on the staff about Ox. Like, is this guy the real deal? And he's like, the real deal is the running back, Lavelle Wright. He would have been just a sophomore at the time.
Yeah.
And he was like, the kid not only has the breakaway speed, he's physical in between the tackles. And the thing, too, that Luckett, he has what it takes in between the ears. And I know, like, that's something I've learned in this job over the last decade. I don't care what the stars say, what he runs in the 40. Like, it takes something up here to be successful on the field on Saturdays. And I know that I don't know him. I haven't spent an extended amount of time with him. But I've spent enough to know he's a yes sir, no sir guy. He's a business guy. He shows up every day for work. If he misses practice, he's hurting. Like, there's a reason. This kid is hungry. He's eager. And I think that's really what's going to help him take that next step as a player.
Yeah, I think it's another, like we talked about Coach Thompson, his program. I think it's really like, it's like these guys he's gotten here, these dudes, I think, love football. And yeah. I think that shows.
Yeah.
And I think they're all going to have probably a significant role on the team this year. And then I think in 2023, they're all going to have huge roles on the team. So North Harden, we've seen them deliver players here all the time. You go back to Andre Woodson's obviously the most famous one, but there's been countless others.
The home of Mark Story.
Mark Story will tell you about it anytime you want to hear about it. But, yeah, I think all those guys are going to be quality players in Lexington, and I think you'll start to see that with them all this season.
We'll have plenty of coverage at fall camp. It's looking like the rotation is going to be Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So not only will we have updates on KentuckySportsRadio.com, we're also going to have a lot more stuff on YouTube this year. But hey, we've got a ton on the table coming your way, and we've also got to talk football recruiting. The big news from Monday, Grant Godfrey, in a surprising twist, the four-star linebacker announces his commitment to Kentucky. A huge, huge, huge recruiting win. This is one of my favorite players in the class, and it means even more that it's a nice surprise commitment, and it's one you're pulling the football, you're Lucy pulling the football out from underneath the feet of Tennessee, a significant recruiting win from the Atlanta area. I love this kid, a great win. Kentucky needed to get a linebacker in this class. He does a lot of things that some previous linebackers have done, and it's a big win from Chris Collins too. Like we've talked about his ability. He's gotten a lot of kids on campus. He sealed the deal in the Atlanta Metro, a very competitive recruiting area. Huge recruiting win for Kentucky.
Yeah, I just want to start off with this, Nick. Like, Ohio and Kentucky were a little down this year from a star power standpoint in the class of 2023. So when that happens, you got to go into other areas and you got to win some four-star recruiting battles. In the past, we've seen Kentucky go on to the DMV, land of Josh Pascal, go into Detroit, land Justin Rogers, land Marquand McCall. But we haven't, like, until really last year, we hadn't really seen them go with the traditional SEC footprint and win four-star recruiting battles. Last year, you saw it with the Wades. You saw it with Barry and Brown. And this year, this is now three, Nick, in the traditional footprint, top 300 players, in all within that kind of draft range. You get Grant Godfrey out of Atlanta. You get Avery Stewart out of Alabama. And then you get, Shamar Porter out of Nashville. I mean, those are three big-time recruiting wins. You're beating teams you're going to play on a fall Saturday in conference play on the recruiting trail. You're beating them in their backyard. Kentucky's going down there and getting these types of kids. So that is very significant in that standpoint alone. Anytime Kentucky goes and gets three top 300 players from the traditional SEC footprint, that's great. And that sets you up to potentially have a great class or can pick up the slack if things in your traditional areas may be a little down. Now, on the field, there is some Jamin Davis vibes with Grant Godfrey.
Oh, that's Look it. You are speaking my language because when you watch him, he's 6 foot three.
Well, he's
got the length. He goes side to side. You worry a little about pad level at sometimes, but there's one clip in his highlight reel. It's a goal line situation, and he does what he needs to get lower. So I think the Jamin Davis, I don't like comparing a four-star recruit to an NFL first-round draft pick, but there's a lot of stuff
as
there.
As a player,
you see the athleticism there, but there's also some stuff to work on. There's a little bit there that you're like, all right, we might take a year or two to develop, but that's perfect because you got Trevin Wallace in there. We're ready to rock and roll.
With Jamin coming out of high school, Nick, it was South Georgia. It was a lighter area where Grant Godfrey's playing in the best region in Atlanta. I mean, you could argue it's the best in the country. I mean, he's playing against Power 5 guys, as you're seeing his tape roll. Jamin was – but he had a slender frame, but he had athleticism. Jamin was just able to put on 40 pounds in Kentucky and keep all that athleticism. I think from a striking aspect with Grant, that's an area that he needs to improve. He's more of a wrap and drag tackler at the moment, and he's not knocking a lot of people backwards, but you can just see some of this movement. And you can see in his frame here as long arms, Nick, he can really move east to west. He's got good change of direction, but you can see a player that can end up being 6'2", 235, 240. And if you remember with Davis, they played him some at outside linebacker. He played some Sam there for Kentucky for a little bit until the light bulb really came on in 2020, and he just became a stud there in the middle of their defense at Mike. But if the stuff never happens to Chris Oates, you know, that was terrible stuff. Like Jamin Davis, you know, he probably plays a lot more at kind of a Sam spot. And I think you're going to see similar with Godfrey. They're going to kind of use him in both areas. And I think when you look at some of their targets this year, they're looking for guys that can do that, that can play outside, some can play inside, some of that versatility so they can do different things with their defense. And if they hit on a guy that can really cover, then you don't have to get nickel as much. You can play kind of a hybrid Sam linebacker there that kind of would potentially give you the best of both worlds, both in run fitting and in zone drops.
That pass coverage, that read there, I mean, it's just spot on. You don't see him. He's good at keeping his outside shoulder free. So there are some little aspects to his game. It's a lot to build on. And this is the kind of prospect that Brad White loves. Like, he loves Noah Matthews because there's just a lot of raw tools for him to build upon. And that's exactly what Grant Godfrey's bringing to the table. The timing of this is great, too, because, look, I know we talked a little bit about you were wondering about the four. It really raises the floor of this recruiting class and allows you to really go after those big fish down the road. So I'm freaking hyped.
Yeah,
I'm hyped. I love this addition.
This is a basketball player too, Nick. So he hasn't spent a lot of time in a legitimate strength training, like a football strength training program. So he's going to be able to add weight pretty quickly. Gosh. Comes from a pedigree. His brother just signed to play basketball for Clemson. He's going to be playing. His brother RJ will be a freshman, true freshman. For Brad Brownell's program there at Clemson this year. He's playing basketball in the ACC, so there's a lot there. I just think, like, I think the ceiling's pretty high. Like, you're not recruiting Grant Godfrey as a true freshman. You're recruiting him as a junior.
Yeah.
So, growing to the body here, you could see him being a versatile, scheme-flexible linebacker who could play multiple roles and can really bring some speed to the position. So, really big recruiting win. Like you said, they beat Tennessee. South Carolina was also involved. Louisville was involved. Wake Forest was involved. There's some he's got to mature physically, but you see some signs there where Kentucky can bank on their development here with him. And 3 years down the road, he could become a really good player for the program.
Grant Godfrey is a Kentucky Wildcat. Love it. Absolutely love it. In other recruiting news, we also learned Neil Avery, who plays a similar position, more of an edge.
Yeah.
Kentucky was the favorite when he decommitted from Penn State. But look it, he went down and visited Ole Miss in the Grove, man. It works its ways. They got a commitment from him.
Yeah. Spoke with our own Chad Simmons, director of recruiting here with On3. Came down to Kentucky, Ole Miss. But Ole Miss seemed like the clear winner here. Like you said, they got him down, I think, three times. They still have the official visit in their back pocket. And so that's hard to beat.
Yep,
hard to beat. But Kentucky was close. Last year, Nick, Tyrese Fearbry took an official visit, committed to Penn State. And I think that may be a similar plan. Brad White's also on Neil Avery. He was on Fierbury.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what kind of year they have, but it seems like he's pretty all in on Ole Miss at the moment. So a tough loss there. Kentucky made a good run at it, but we're unable to get Avery's another guy who's a basketball player.
Yeah.
Got great length, and he's more of a – he's a true kind of edge rusher, whereas Godfrey's going to be, I think, end up off ball mostly. But a nice win there for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss.
Elsewhere, though, Kentucky might get one final commitment. No, actually there's two more that could be on the table, and I've got predictions in the ON3 recruiting prediction machine for each player to go to Kentucky. Four-star defensive lineman Kendrick Gilbert. We don't know when a decision date might happen. I heard – leading into last week, and there's a chance he could unofficially visit. I haven't gotten any confirmation on that since then. But so that one's out there. But Nikhil Beatron, I always want to call him Bertrand. There's only one R, Nikhil Beatron.
Well, yeah. I've seen that. I've seen that in the queue.
Actually, during UK Fan Day on Saturday. And that one feels like it's Kentucky and Syracuse, which is an odd
he former just took it, right. He just took an unofficial to A&M's huge kind of unofficial visit weekend that most everybody in college football had this past weekend. Mm-hmm. A&M was calling it their summer pool party. And so we'll have to see what the buzz was out of that. I think, though, I'm not sure he was a take going into that trip. I don't know if he is now or not. We'll have to see. He hasn't taken an official to A&M yet.
Nope.
And so that's going to be – and he's already pushed back the announcement once. So we'll see what happens. He's
decommitted
there.
From Colorado. So, you know, there could be some more delaying. But if Kentucky can put the squeeze on it, though, then you can.
I put in a prediction earlier. That was because I didn't think that A&M visit was going to happen. Now that that's happened, I think that changes things. So we'll have to dig in here this week to see how it develops. But he's one of the guys that Yenzer jumped on early here.
Yeah.
And they wanted a true, I think, tackle, where I think they have one now with Malachi Wood, but he's more of a development type player. I think they wanted more solid type of a guy who would maybe play a little bit earlier. I mean, he's more physically kind of ready at this point in his recruitment. And B-Tran's gotten some, you know, Auburn was in on him, even though they liked him at defensive tackle for some strange reason. But A&M is really kind of the big battle right there for Kentucky. And if they miss on him, they're going to need to find probably another tackle prospect somewhere down the line. And if our recruiting board at KSR, Nick, there's not really, you know,
not a whole lot out there
that I know of right now that Kentucky could potentially get in on. So that'll be something interesting to watch as the season kind of progresses if they lose out on this Philadelphia guy. Another Mid-Atlantic guy too, Nick. I mean, they're really hammering that area. Philadelphia, DC, up into New Jersey.
Mid-Atlantic. Went from the Midwest to the Mid-Atlantic. Now Kentucky's there everywhere. Big Blue Nation's everywhere. We're right here on the KSR YouTube channel. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Subscribe, rate, review, or wherever you can. This has been a lot of fun. Changing things up a little bit, Luckett, but we ain't going nowhere.
I don't plan to. Maybe our producer Trey can put some like makeup on us, make us look better on this. Can I come with this, Trey?
I don't think any makeup is going to be helping us at all. Yeah. But we appreciate Trey for helping us out behind the scenes. This is going to be awesome. Looking forward to working with him all season long. Mm-hmm. We're going to have stuff not only from Media Day, but also from the open practice Saturday. Details of the night you've been released. But Kentucky fans will get a chance to watch the team Saturday morning/afternoon at the Joe Craft Football Training Facility. We'll be there. We'll have a rapid reaction after we watch the Cats practice and a whole lot more.
And Wednesday, media day, we get to talk to the coaches, coordinators, some of the players. It's always a pretty good event. You can always kind of get some nice little nuggets there. So we'll see how that develops. May or may not get another update on Chris Rodriguez.
We'll see.
TBD. We'll find out. But another 11, long story short, another 11 personnel is coming soon. It's football season, y'all.
Until then, go Cats.